Land. It's something you've been talking about, I'm sure, wondering whether you should sell your guest house, wondering when someone's going to drag you off your farm. I mean, all this, people are just getting absolutely crazy. A businessman says to me the other day, I wonder if I should invest in this country because they might just take my house that I would like to spend R4.5 million, R5 million on. I sometimes think, my personal opinion, is that everybody just needs to take a deep breath and one needs to have a realistic, logical discussion around land in South Africa. It is an issue. I've got three amazing guests, plus I've got some listeners who've decided to join us this morning as well in studio. Welcome. Great having you here. Everybody looking a bit worried. You worried you're going to lose your land? No? Okay, now everybody going no, they're not worried about losing their land. But let me introduce you to the panel this morning. And by the way, you can call in on 021-446-0567 if you'd like to call in directly. WhatsApp voice notes on 072-567-1567. Professor Ruth Hall, good to meet you face to face. Always talking on the wireless. The UWC's Institute for Poverty, Land and Agrarian Studies. Great having you here.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be in the studio for the first time.
That's good. We should,
nice to meet you.
Telling the team we should be doing this more often, you know, meeting people face to face to have real discussions. And then Annalise Crosby, Head of Land Affairs at AgriSA.
Good morning.
And then Nazir Sunday, a man who's very busy, you know, getting his hands dirty, amongst other things. And he's the convener of the Philippi Horticultural Area.
Thank you.
The bread basket of the Western Cape, as they call it, that everybody's trying to develop on.
Of the city. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks.
We'll get down to that one at some stage. Right. I'm going to ask you each to introduce yourselves and just talk about the why you exist in the first place, not as a human being, but in your capacity, if you don't mind. And then we'll go into this discussion on land. Mm. You know, some people saying, yeah, but there isn't a land issue. And they're quoting all sorts of people going, yeah, but a lot of the blacks have land, you know. What's the problem? So, Professor Ruth Hall, just an introduction to yourself, your institute, what you do, why you exist.
Okay. PLAAS is an institute at UWC, and UWC has, I think, over time tried to position itself as an intellectual leader on this issue of land. And what we've been doing since we were established in 1995 as an institute is trying to do research on the ground, trying to find out what's happening on the ground, and trying to engage with policymakers and broaden out the public debate. Mm. What we've seen within the past 2 months is, of course, the issue of land, which has often been relegated to the backwaters. I think that we must be very honest and upfront about the fact that our ANC governments since 1994, despite the rhetoric, have actually not prioritized land reform. Yeah. They said in 1994, we're going to transfer 30% of white commercially owned farmland into black hands in the first 5 years. And here we are 24 years later, and only about 8% has been transferred.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, within that context, we've been trying to engage with policymakers to be honest. It hasn't always gone well. Often government doesn't want to listen to research.
Yeah.
But we think that there is a big public debate and lots of people want to know more about land issues. What are the rural land issues? What are the urban land issues? Who wants land? For what do they want land?
Exactly.
Who should get it? And so these are some of the big questions. I think that actually this issue about expropriation without compensation has now come onto the political platform. And we can get into the details about what the Constitution already provides for, but my very short argument about expropriation without compensation is that it may be warranted in certain cases. We can get into the details of that. But what's actually quite useful is that even this issue coming onto the political narrative, the platform, is opening up broader questions. People are asking about what's happening with people in communal areas. What about urban demand for land? So I think that the land issue is being opened up and we need to have this debate.
Yeah, no, indeed. I mean, I addressed an executive of a big company the other day. We were talking. I did a political review and one of the issues that was raised was land. And, you know, once again, it's how, the question was, how can we get involved to try and assist with this issue. It's everybody in this country that needs to be able to play a role. Because it's not just about the land. It's really about the dignity. It's about the Gini coefficient. If one looks at the World Bank, the most, just amongst the measured countries, the most unequal society in South Africa, I mean, in the world. We need to bear that in mind because our politically, medium to long term, if we don't deal with that, it's a time bomb that's going to explode, and then someone might just grab your land. So it needs to be dealt with, and it needs to be dealt with effectively. So, Annelise Crosby, Head of Land Affairs at AgriSA. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your portfolio and why you exist.
Yes, so I've been working for AgriSA for almost 21 years now, dealing with the land portfolio almost from the outset, around 1995. So I've been privileged over the years to have been part of many of the debates, to have met many interesting people from all over the spectrum. And what is wonderful is if you are in these debates and meetings, you get to meet the people and, you know, understand where they're coming from, where all the different stakeholders, the people representing the land, landless, the academics, government people, where everybody's coming from. That's been a real privilege. So AgriSA is the organization that's representing most of the farmers in this country. There are other organizations, but that's the biggest one.
Yes.
And we have been very active in the debate around land, also formulating our own plans as to how we see land reform in the agricultural space specifically unfolding.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of affiliates at grassroots level, commodity organizations and provincial unions that are actively involved in assisting, training, skilling new black farmers that are coming into our sector.
That's important. And there are some farmers, a handful of them, doing some really good stuff with the land that they own without needing to be coaxed into it. They've decided to, hey, man, Paul Kluver, I'm a big fan of Paul Kluver, by the way, you know, handing over that land and even starting another brand for the people who work.
There's actually a lot of that happening.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say the majority. It's something we'll get into, and it's something that needs to be looked at. So, Nazir Sonder, convener of the Philippi Horticultural Area. You guys just get work done. Tell us a bit about the horticultural area, your role within it.
Well, the horticulture area is situated on 3,000 hectares of our best farmlands in the province, actually, right here in the city, within the city, but a urban edge, and our area produces over 200,000 tons of vegetables, employs over 6,000 workers. Our area has the potential to double those figures, and this is exactly where we are at the moment, where we're struggling for the last 10 years to protect the area and grow our production. But our area is also vitally important for the Cape Flats aquifer. It's the last significant recharge zone of the aquifer. And so when we are looking at the issue with climate change and the drought, you know, we've been saying for the last 8 years that, you know, this is a valuable aquifer. This is a valuable resource. We should be saving it because it could be supplying the city with water in the future. And so our area has come more and more into prominence lately because of these climate change and drought factors. So, I mean, my role in the area is I was born there. We were removed out of the area in 1973. I came back in 91. I bought an hectare, which is all I could afford. And but I was actually a trained baker, so I was in the bakery industry. I had my own bakery. And then I decided for some lunatic reason to start farming. and then I've been losing money ever since.
It's like owning a boat, though, so.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, this just shows that, you know, farming is not like any other business. It's a intergenerational business. It takes time over generations to develop farming system, develop the skills and so on. So, you know, when we talk about land reform, we cannot view land reform as simply as, okay, we put some people on the land and within a year, they're going to be very productive and we're going to live all happily ever after. It's not like that. Our farming system tells us that in our area, that if the German farmers who came to the Cape and started this intensive horticulture production, it took them over 100 years to develop their systems, right? And we call that heritage farming systems, which is actually something that is under protection by UNESCO. And so as new farmers, we are now looking at how we can take that experience and develop it forward with the new conditions we face, climate change, access to land and so on. But I want to come back to my position. I'm actually the chair of the PHA Food and Farming Campaign. The campaign was established in 2013 to try to protect the area and take part in the public participation processes, but also tell the city, do you know where your food comes from? Because, this is one of the big blind spots that we have in the city. Yeah. People just don't know where the food comes from, and therefore they don't understand the impact of areas such as ours and other farming areas on their lives. So that's been our role and my role as a campaign chair over the last few years.
And there's also been lots of innovation around land use. For example, in America, I forget the name of the dude we spoke to. He approached the various counties, etc., and said, listen, you've got some land here. Can I use it? I know you're going to be using. So he said to us, as long as you can see green grass growing there, it's got potential, right? And he started farming, if you can call it that, on little bits of land all over the place, and then started taking all of that and selling that produce onto localized supply chains. So, for example, if we talk about farming, everybody thinks about a farm as this big thing that you're going to farm on. It could even be small pieces of land owned by individuals doing their bit, quality control. The likes of Pick and Pay and ShopRite Checkers coming on board going, actually, our local stores will take that on board. So when we talk about this, one also needs to look at the innovation around it. But we know that land is an issue. Is there anybody on this panel that disagrees that land is an issue? Please, say so now.
No, land is a huge issue.
Okay, land is an issue. Everybody agrees land is an issue. Now, I'd like to hear from you how much of an issue it is, and from your perspective, what that issue actually is. And we start with you, Ruth, because it is an issue, and you talk about an issue to who, how, etc. Mm. Unpack that for us.
Who wants access to land? Who doesn't have access to land? And what? Why would people want access to land? There have been two very significant national studies looking at the nature of the demand for land. In the 1990s, the late 1990s, and then again in 2005. And what we know from this data, from the evidence, is that over 85% of black households across urban and rural areas in South Africa want access to land or want access to more land than they have currently.
Yeah.
And that the vast majority of these people are wanting half a hectare or less.
Okay.
So there's an enormous demand for land for settlement. There are some people who want access to big farms, but they're a minority. So I think that one of the big mistakes of our land reform program is that we have focused on getting large commercial farms and then asking poor people to run large commercial farms without capital, without state support, and then blaming them for their own failure.
Exactly.
Whereas, in fact, what we should be probably doing is saying, who wants access to land? And perhaps the demand is for more modest parcels of land, well located, next to the rural towns, where, of course, a very significant, we estimate around 2.4 million people have been evicted from farms since 1994, and a lot of former farm workers are now sitting in informal settlements around rural towns.
Yes.
So those are people who want access to land, but they want access to small holdings, a secure place to live, a little bit of land for producing something. And so I think that we have to totally rethink our whole model of what we're doing with land reform.
Exactly.
And democratize the debate, open up the space for people to say, to put their hands up and say, here's my demand, here's what I want to do with land. And let's be clear, I think that the last 2 months have been very instructive in showing us that the demand for land is not only a rural demand, it's not only for farming, there's the demand for space in the city. There's the demand for well-located space in the city, which means that land reform also needs to become the responsibility of our municipalities, correct, of our metros.
Exactly. I like that because, yes, everybody tends to think about the farms, but even if you're just going to develop housing, there. It's not just about the housing. It's how you build those homes, what type of technologies you use. Can you empower people to build their own homes? Mm. When you build those homes, how do you structure those homes so that services can be provided from those homes? You know, where are they located in relation to maybe richer suburbs? How do you do skills development on that land in order to make sure that people can extract value after those skills have been developed? So it's a much deeper discussion. So from an AgriSA perspective, though, it is an issue. How do you see this issue existing at the moment in relation to everybody? Farmers, the poorest of the poor. Speak about that Gini coefficient.
Okay, so there is a spectrum of needs, from people who just need housing to people who need small plots, emerging farmers to big and macro commercial farmers. Mm. And I think one of the problems with land reform programs over the years has been that they tended to look for a one-size-fits-all instrument to cater for all those
exactly.
needs, and that can never work. Mm. You know, so we're already 63% urbanized in this country. It's unlikely that we'll reverse that trend. It's also an international trend. And that has certain consequences. On the one hand, it means exactly as Ruth has said, that the need primarily is around the towns and cities for people to have access to maybe a small plot where they can grow something to substitute, you know, their income and feed their family or whatever. And what's frustrating about this debate about the, around expropriation without compensation is that so much work has already been done. But that seems to be completely ignored at this point in time. Mm. For example, one of the Operation Pakisa outcomes was a program that they call ALDRI, it's Accelerated Land Reform and Distribution, something like that, initiative. And that proposal says exactly that we must make land available, small plots around towns and cities for people where they can have access to services and markets and all of that. So that proposal is on the table, but you know, the lack of will from the government departments to really take it on board and start running, and I'm not saying it's only government's responsibility. Private sector also has a role there. But that is a little bit frustrating. So, you know, for us, the focus is on agricultural land because our members are farmers, and there are issues very specific to the farming community, like the farm worker issues. Mm. We also, you know, we come out very strongly on the protection of agricultural land as far as possible, like the Philippi example. You know, we have very little agricultural land. We've lost 3 million hectares since 1994 to other uses. Mm. We must try and, you know, optimally utilize the productive agricultural land that we have for productive purposes.
No, indeed. And we're going to move on to Nazir coming up. Zane's got to tell you about the traffic out there. You know what it's like. Hey, no buses. Metro rails delayed things for an hour, and they tell you to use alternative transport. Can someone explain to me what that would be? Taxis, obviously. So the taxis are bursting at the seams, so we need to know what's happening on our roads as well. And just to recap, you've just heard Annalise Crosby, their head of land affairs at AgriSA, and before her, we had Professor Ruth Hall, UWC's Institute for Poverty, Land, and Agrarian Studies. Land is the issue this morning. You can call in on 021-446-0567, especially if you are working for Pick and Pay and ShopRite and Woolworths and all of these other massive supply chains out there. You should be part of the problem. What are you doing? Jonathan Ackerman, are you listening to me? Give me a call, my friend, and let's talk about that. Peter, are you listening to us from ShopRite Checkers? What are you guys doing? So we'll get back to that, but first Nazir is going to give us his take on the land issue and talking land. Now, I've been going and chatting to the panel. I have an audience here that certainly has some questions as well, so we're going to get a roving mic going there once Regan's done the news. But I just want to deal with the uncertainty very quickly. Quick one from each and every one of you. The politicians are driving me bloody mad. The EFF wants, you know, the state to own all the land. And they, you know, I don't think possible, workable. The ANC's come out in Parliament supporting this motion. But the ANC obviously took what the EFF said and said, sorry, no, we need to relook at that. We will look at Section 25 of the Constitution. No one has said that we're going to take your land. Parliament hasn't said we're going to take your land. Prof Hall, from your side, the way this political debate is causing confusion, and I know within confusion and all that sort of stuff, there are opportunities, but your take.
I totally agree, Kino, that in the uncertainty, there are opportunities. The Constitutional Review Committee between now and the end of August is going to be having public hearings across the country. I think that in this context, one of the big opportunities is to go back to the kinds of discussions that were happening in the 1990s. You know, there's been so little change in terms of inequality in South Africa, and part of that inequality is centered around who owns what.
Yeah.
Issues of property. Why don't we go back and have discussions with the big institutional landowners, the forestry sector, the sugar sector, the big the churches that own a lot of land, the financial institutions. Increasingly, your pension fund is probably owning a hell of a lot of land.
True.
So I think that I think that it's wrong to blame the Constitution. The reason why we haven't done more land reform is not due to constitutional constraints, but the fact that this issue is now on the table opens up a political space for more creative solutions.
And maybe it just forces people who are now feeling uncomfortable with themselves to maybe start looking at their role in dealing with this issue.
Yeah, I think I want to get back to something that Dr. Ruth Hall mentioned, and also Annalise mentioned, that I agree with the take that the council municipalities have a huge role to play to make land available in the urban areas and also in the peri-urban, in the rural areas, close to well-located land, as Ruth puts it, to the urban centers for farming, but also land within the city for social housing, right? I mean, our history dictates that we address the social housing issue in the city. My family was removed out of Newlands, right? From my maternal side. On my paternal side, my family was removed out of the PHA area. So that has to be addressed. Right. So the council's got a huge responsibility. Now, the latest thing around the regulation around this is that the National Special Development Framework allows municipalities, gives municipalities more power in terms of planning for the cities, for the municipalities. And our city, as an example of one who has taken on this whole issue very quickly since 2015, has used that in their bylaws to identify land as an opportunity for developers.
Absolutely.
Right. And so in that conversation, what has happened is that access to land for well-located land has fallen on the wayside, and rural land close to the proximity of the city.
Yeah.
And so in our case, we are kind of suffering under the gentrification of the farmlands.
Exactly. Well, I mean, if you look at what Stefanuti Stocks, for example, owns in the Philippi area. First, I just want to wrap up with the panel. I did not give Annalise Cosby a chance. I was talking about the land issue. We were talking specifically about expropriation without compensation. You saying it should be broader than that?
Yes. Look, there was an exercise 2 years ago where a group of experts developed land reform scenarios from 2016 to 2030.
Yeah.
And they identified four plausible scenarios. And, you know, everybody from traditional leaders to landless people to organized agriculture was involved in that process. Mm-hmm. And that also illustrated, you know, that it's critical that we do find a solution to the land reform problem and the frustration and anger of people that have been building up. And the high-level panel report, you know, clearly points to the fact that it's the fact that the Constitution requires compensation to be paid upon expropriation is by far not the biggest impediment in the way of land reform. It's lots of other things.
Right.
And I would really like to see the debate, you know, also focus on
what
those
are the other
issues.
Things?
Those are things like lack of political will, inadequate budget, poor implementation, corruption, lack of support to beneficiaries who get land, the fact that the state is holding onto land and not transferring it to beneficiaries, things like that, a lot of which can be relatively easily addressed.
Ruth?
Well, I would agree. The Constitution has always said that the state can expropriate land in the interests of land reform. It says it's in the nation's interests, it's in the public interest for the state to expropriate land and to redistribute that land. And for the past 24 years, the state has chosen not to do so. Mm-hmm. So the willing buyer, willing seller idea is a policy choice. It's not in the Constitution. Ah. And that is the key issue. What I would say is, firstly, I think that we should be realistic that if we move towards expropriating, it's going to be slow initially.
Yes.
Because we're going to have a lot of court cases. We're going to have people contesting compensation in court. Expropriation is one choice. Expropriation is an administrative process where the state says, we are going to take your property by force. Yeah. The question of compensation is a separate matter. The state could take property by force and pay market-related compensation, partial compensation, or zero compensation. Those issues of compensation are going to be dealt with in court. We should expect that land reform will go slower if we have an expropriation without compensation approach. And I think that a lot of people are expecting that this would be the magic bullet. Mm. It will speed up the process. Probably right. not.
Yeah.
But the other point that I would make that I think is really important to recognize is that even though the state is not expropriating land, actually people's property rights are being expropriated. People are losing property rights all the time, and it's mostly poor and black people within South Africa who are losing their property rights. Two big categories, in fact, perhaps three big categories, would be people in communal areas, often losing their land for big mining investments and other commercial investments, are being kicked off their land. You know, next week there's going to be a big court case, the Xolobeni case from the Eastern Cape, where people are trying to resist being forcibly removed off their land through deals between mining companies and traditional authorities. A second category would be farm workers and farm dwellers who are being forcibly evicted.
Yeah.
Then we have people within our informal settlements being forcibly removed. So let's be clear. Expropriation without compensation is happening. It's happening to the black and the poor. It's not happening to the white and the rich. And so our big question that we now face is, when should we expropriate? Because expropriation is about breaking a deadlock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When should we pay compensation?
Mm.
You know, Kino, thanks, because I wanted to talk a little bit about the background about food security, because in the context of land reform and even expropriation, why are we doing this? And I think one of the things that's a big issue in the country is food insecurity. There are millions of people going to bed hungry, right? And this is due to access of land, but also the high food prices, right? So I think we have to understand that who is producing our food. So in this country, 34,000 white commercial farmers are producing 80% of our food, right? But only 20% of those farmers are producing 80% of the food. In other words, 80% of our rural land in the farming areas are used as something to bank money in, right? So it's 80% of our land is owned by landlords basically and not utilized for farming, but it could be utilized for other things like game farming and other things. So I think, and contrary to that, is that we have in this country 200,000 black farmers who are like me, have 1, 2, 3 other jobs because we just have too little land to become economically viable and live off the land, this thing, right? So I think we have to understand this. And the other thing that I want to quickly raise is the issue about compensation, expropriation without compensation. You know, in our area, developers has bought large tracts of lands from white farmers for whatever reason they want to sell. They didn't sell to they didn't sell to other white farmers or even to the government land reform program. they sought to get a bigger price and they sold to developers because they were offering more money.
Well, that's what Ruth
was
mentioning.
Now, these developers are actually making a great argument for expropriation without compensation because they took a risk. They speculated on the fact that they will buy agricultural land cheaply. They make tons of money at the end of the day. They don't care about climate change. They don't care about food security. They don't care about any of the issues.
Got to calls.
That is a benefit for the city.
Okay. No, indeed. Now, okay, let's first, even before I do traffic, I just want to identify one or two calls off the floor. We're going to be doing those, right? Zane's going to do a very quick traffic because we haven't had any people commenting as of yet, and I want to give everybody an opportunity to have a say. So,
well, they didn't sell to other white farmers or even to the government land reform program. They sought to get a bigger price and they sold to developers because they were offering more money.
Well, that's what Ruth was mentioning.
Now, these developers are actually making a great argument for expropriation without compensation because they took a risk. They speculated on the fact that they will buy agricultural land cheaply. They make tons of money at the end of the day. They don't care about climate change. They don't care about food security. They don't care about any of the issues.
Got to calls.
That is a benefit for the city.
Okay. No, indeed. Now, okay, let's first, even before I do traffic, I just want to identify one or two calls off the floor. We're going to be doing those, right? Zane's going to do a very quick traffic because we haven't had any people commenting as of yet, and I want to give everybody an opportunity to have a say. So a very quick, there's 14 minutes to 9. We need 3 hours to do this type of show, actually. So I'm just going to one of our studio audience guests, Bevel, I believe. That's correct. Okay, so I'm just going to ask Mario to give us the audio. Bruce is, I'm not quite sure what's happened. Bevel, just get to this microphone over here, please, so that we can actually hear what you have to say.
Yeah.
There we go.
I work in Woodstock, and I'm part of the occupation in the old Woodstock Hospital. And I'm involved in different housing movements, and one of them is Reclaim the City.
Mm.
The issue of public social housing is an important aspect in this city.
Mm.
We've had colonial periods in which people who build the city are excluded from living in the city. And we have what I will refer to as a corporation, not a municipality, that is administering this city. Social housing, in the way in which the city council understands it, Steen Villa is a classic example how things have gone wrong. That's not the way that we want public housing. Public housing must be exactly that, public housing. From post-apartheid period in 92 up till today, there hasn't been one social public housing development from Sea Point down the southern suburbs line. Black workers who've provided their labor to service this part of the city have got nowhere else to go. The city is proposing only Volver Rivier and Blikkiesdorp. If anyone has seen how it looks, it's completely inhumane to ask people to move from the inner city to go and reside in those areas where the city has not provided the kind of social services necessary for relocation.
Okay.
It's meant to be temporary, but people have been living, for example, in Volver Rivier and Blikkiesdorp for the past 8 years.
Absolutely. Thank you for making that particular point. I mean, I particularly have a problem with Blikkiesdorp. And, I mean, it's just a hotbed for a whole host of other things, and crime and gangsterism and you name it. And people are just thrown away. And it costs them a hell of a lot to actually travel from there to the city. As a matter of fact, in Woodstock, there was a lady, I forget the name of the road. We went to visit this old lady at 80. They were going to evict her. She lives with her two sons. But if her sons had to move from to Blikkiesdorp with her, where they offered her a house, and they had to travel to the city where they work, they'd have to spend half their salaries doing that. So what does that mean for dignity as well? So that's an important issue. Ishmael, Ruth, we'll give you an opportunity now, but Ishmael Motala, Western Cape Chairman of the African Farmers Association of South Africa, you've given us a call. Good morning. Your comment?
Good morning to you, Kido. Good morning to your guests. I think from our side, our concentration is purely on the agricultural sector and agricultural land. One of the things we need to take into cognizance is that we cannot talk of land without looking at land within the and talking about the transformation of the economy of the agricultural sector. Because we can have land, but if the economy is closed, if access to to markets, access to funding, access to genetic material, and where there are companies and individuals who have monopolistic behavior within this industry, within the agricultural sector, and within the economy.
Yeah.
So we need to look at all of those things from a holistic point of view. And if you take the Western Cape specifically, where out of 11 million hectares of agricultural land, only 1% is owned by black people, and that of that 1%, more than 50% is not financially viable. It tells you that we have a systemic problem in the economy of the agricultural sector, which is white-owned, untransformed, and does not want to transform. And this is where I disagree with Agri South Africa.
Okay. Ishmael, thank you very much for that. So we've got two very distinct points. There are obviously sports bulletins that we have to do, and there's a spot bracket, because we have to pay salaries and all those things as well. And then I'll come back to the panel to respond to those issues. That'll be next. It's all about land this morning. We've got about 4 minutes. Doesn't seem like a long time, but I've got the audience who's going to be asking a couple of questions. I'm going to ask you to be succinct, if you don't mind, each and every one of you, and then we can get the panel to respond to that. So introduce yourself, sir.
So I'm Farrell Hunter. I work in the non-profit sector dealing with socioeconomic justice through education.
Yeah.
So I think a point that comes through for me clearly here is the fact that we're dealing with the justice denied to the majority of people. And when I hear the point Nazir raises about how mining houses are colluding with traditional leaders, for me that sounds like a colonial history being upheld in a so-called new South Africa. And I think that's something we have to be mindful of and be dealing with very, very closely. The point in terms of practice, because I think we need to look at what people call best practice, I like to call it good practice, is that there are economic and international models around how land, for example, can be dealt with cooperatively. Rather than individual private ownership, you look at how people come together as collectives in the way Africans did it. In fact, in Africa for many years, but of course we've moved to a Western model of individual private ownership, and that's where the problem is, I think, in large in the country. Just down the road in townships, we have youth. Many or millions of them who are unemployed, some of them have gone into these cooperative models to find ways of sustaining themselves and their communities doing agricultural and other activities.
Like a kibbutz.
You could call it that. We'd like to keep it local and call it a cooperative in the sense, and there are many models like this, and we have to look at that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we just repeat bad practices of the past.
Okay, brilliant. You know, the cooperative model is something we'll look at. So once again, just introduce yourself and anybody else. Yep, there we go. Let me just hand the microphone over there. There we go. Yes,
sir. Hi, Keno. I'm Bill from Franschhoek.
Hi, Bill.
I'm just going to reflect something that Ruth kicked off with, actually. The International Race Relations Organization carries out an annual survey in South Africa, amongst other places, and land is paramount. The latest statistics that I pulled off the internet says that less than 1% of people in South Africa are interested in land. And to back that up, they quote that of the plus or minus 80,000 land claims that have been made and successfully made, less than 10% of those people have taken the land back. All the others have taken the money. Why are we getting so excited and occupying so much political time over land?
Okay. Yeah? Okay, I think you made a good point there, and I think that's pretty much what we have time for. So there's a lot to talk about here, but the floor is yours. There's social housing versus urban development, black farmers and resources versus white farming resources, for example, land and cooperatives to deal with the land issue, research, only 1% interested in the land itself there. Ruth, let's start with you.
Well, firstly, Keno, I would actually suggest that we haven't done justice to this topic today.
Absolutely.
And
it's very broad.
Let's think about this in a more clear way, perhaps in the future. The less than 1%, I don't know the methodology that was used for that. The 10% who took land instead of cash, we're going to have to look at that. What I would say is that there is a lot of obfuscation around methodologies, around who wants what where. But the most important thing is that land reform is a process of trying to overcome spatial apartheid. We have this divide within our cities between the suburbs and the townships and the suburbs and the townships and the informal settlements. In our rural areas, we have the divide between the big commercial farms and the Bantustans. And the idea of land reform is that we should be blurring these lines. We should be integrating. There should be more economic justice. And that also white privilege was built up on the basis of